Hello, one and all, to the second week of 2021. Will it be as good as the first? Tune in to find out. Today, of course, is Monday, which means that it is quite a fantastic day. Francesca Fiorentini joins us as always. How's it going, Francesca?
You know, fine, I think.
Few things have happened since we last talked.
A few things, just a few things. I think they all watched TDR, saw me making fun of their Lord and Savior. And we're like, we are macho men.
I'll show you.
And then they did, but also they had help from the inside. So
Yeah, I think the thing about the conversation about toxic masculinity is that we focus too much on the toxic and not enough on the fragile and sad. Yeah. They are toxic, but they're toxic because they're fragile and sad. And so they lash out anyway. And of course, it's tied into race in some fairly obvious fashions, which we'll go over in this show. So welcome back, everyone. Welcome back, Francesca. Glad to have you today. This is a big news Monday. Don't tell JR, those are supposed to be reserved for the middle of the week. But we've got impeachment, we've got bannings. It's 1984 up in here. Anyway, we've got consequences for the Coors? What? In this economy? And we've got insider accounts of what happened in the Capitol on Wednesday. We've got a lot, basically. So you're definitely not gonna wanna miss it. Also, heads up to our YouTube members of tier two and tier three. So normally on Mondays, Francesca and I record a top 10 list. I'm gonna be doing a solo one a little bit later on the day, back at home, because there's been requests for board game related content. So I'm gonna be doing my current top 10 board games. I'll be recording that later on. It'll be made available either late today or possibly early tomorrow. We'll see how that works. But anyway, thank you to everybody who's become a member. Really do appreciate that. Francesca's here. If you wanna show your love for Francesca, I believe there's an emoji for that. You can actually do that now.
Really?
Memorializing her for all time. Yeah, I'm seeing a ton of them actually. Indra Jara just put your face like 12 times.
Oh wow, my work is done. I can leave. I've made it, goodbye.
You can, you're there. Anyway, with that, why don't we do this thing?
Okay.
Why don't we see what's left of America? Oh, and thank you everybody for watching, by the way. Please hit the like button if you haven't already. And if you send us tweets, super chats, you comment along on the Twitch, you give us your tweeties, we'll read some of them as we go. So let's do that now. As promised, impeachment Mark II is here. Democratic lawmakers in the House of Representatives have introduced a single charge of impeachment, the quote, incitement of insurrection against President Donald Trump over the deadly riot at the US Capitol last week. The four-page impeachment bill draws from Trump's own false statements about his election defeat to Democrat Joe Biden, his pressure on state officials in Georgia to find him more votes. Hey, remember that phone call that we all moved on from?
Yeah.
In his White House rally ahead of the Capitol siege, in which he encouraged thousands of supporters to fight like hell and show how strong they are before they stormed the building, let alone all the behind the scenes information about what's coming out about what he was doing during that now. So it was blocked. Also, the attempt to urge Vice President Mike Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment, that was also blocked. So that's where we're at right now, Francesca. They tried, sort of, and they're gonna try again soon, but that's what we've got.
Yeah, there is now a raging debate with constitutional scholars going on about whether or not a president can be impeached after leaving office. And it seems like the answer, just like the answer to can Trump pardon himself, isn't no. So I'm kind of hopeful and I'm interested to see if an impeachment does continue on and potentially under a Democratic Senate. But yeah, you knew this had to happen. This had to happen and I'm glad it did. And I know we're gonna get into more of the details, but look, like you just pointed it out. The phone call where Trump is straight up leaning on an attorney general or secretary of, what's Brad again? I always forget.
It was the Secretary of State.
Secretary of State. Yes, Ravensburger, yeah. Leaning on him to basically find him a bunch of ballots and fraudulently try and win the election. Like, I don't really understand why that's just lumped into one article of impeachment. It feels very separate than the incitement of the violence, you know, is separate than trying to, you know, bribe or lean on or pressure an official to actually cheat an election for you. Yeah. But hey, this is Trump, baby. I mean, that's where we are. And you know, the criming doesn't stop. Just so many crimes. Like, I wonder how many more crimes are going to be happening between now and January 20th.
We've only got like a week, 9 days. That's time for some crimes. I think you can crime quite a bit. And yeah, and basically what he did with Raffensperger was very similar to what he did to Mike Pence. He said, you need to save me. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. If you don't, people are gonna be really mad, you know? And Raffensperger has faced death threats. His wife has faced death threats. They removed people from the Georgia Capitol at the same time. Everybody's focused on DC. I understand. We're almost entirely focused on DC, but there were multiple state level versions of this that were going on at the same time that Red Hat wearers were storming the Capitol to find and possibly execute Mike Pence. It's a very similar sort of thing. And this is what we've got, the attempt to impeach. There's gonna be a vote later on this week. They tried to do it basically by acclamation or whatever, just a voice thing. They're gonna go on the record and have a vote later on. Mm-hmm. Mitch McConnell, who unfortunately still has power, says that it's not gonna happen in the Senate. So despite the fact that Mitch McConnell, from what I've read, had to be basically picked up and carried out of the building to avoid them potentially harming or killing him, that caused him to turn rhetorically against Trump a little bit. But even that, a threat to his ailing turtle body, was not enough to get him to support impeachment, or at least not stand against it. You could just allow a vote and then vote against it. He's gonna block a vote from happening effectively.
Man, I just imagine like the least sexy version of the bodyguard of someone grabbing Mitch McConnell, you know. And I will always block your legislation. I'm so sorry. It's too early.
That was pretty good.
It's too early to sing. I mean, usually I can hit those notes. Yeah, McConnell. Oh, blah. But I do have. That is what he sounds like, but I do have faith that this will be going forward, and it matters, right? As I think people have been pointing out, because if there is a successful impeachment in both houses, Trump won't be able to serve in office in the future, I believe, barring him from office, which is kind of a win for Republicans as well as Democrats, of course. Exactly. If Ted Cruz or Josh Hawley or any of the other, you know, again, MAGA showgirls are trying to step into his shoes, you know, then this behooves them as well. It helps them, you know, and they can kind of get a, you know, they can pass it off as if they had no hand in voting to impeach him. But it also it neutralizes him completely if he can't serve in office again. So I think that's a win. I wonder if they see it as well.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see what happens on Wednesday. I have said for a long time, I don't think that any of these things are actually gonna happen. I think that we're gonna get to Biden becoming president, and then, you know, the sword of Damocles wielded by Trump will be hanging over our heads for the next few years. But I don't think anything else is going to happen. That's my assumption. Now, there are a couple of I am, but like, I'm a mix. I'm a parfait where it's like a layer of vanilla ice cream, a layer of delicious ground beef. Like, they don't necessarily go together. I'm an idealist and naive in a number of different ways, but also kind of a cynic. There are a couple of different counter arguments to the impeachment thing coming from very different sorts of people. The first is coming from Republicans saying, you can't do this. We need to unify everybody. You need to come together. We've been so apart. I don't know why. I don't know who's driven us apart, but we need to come together by not having any consequences for an attempt to overthrow the government. My response to that is shut up. Shut up, you stupid fake liars. Shut up. But that's why I'm not an elected representative, because that's literally the best I can do. We have people who can do better, including Representative Ocasio-Cortez, who had this to say.
We have to understand that what happened on Wednesday was insurrection against the United States. That is what Donald J. Trump engaged in, and that is what those who stormed the Capitol engaged in. And so when we talk about healing, the process of healing is separate and in fact requires accountability. And so if we allow insurrection against the United States with impunity, with no accountability, we are inviting it to happen again. That is how serious it is. And I do not believe that perhaps my colleagues weren't in that room. Perhaps my colleagues were not fully present for the events on Wednesday, but we came close to half of the House nearly dying on Wednesday. And if a foreign head of state, if another head of state came in and ordered an attack on the United States Congress, would we say that that should not be prosecuted? Would we say that there should be absolutely no response to that? No. It is an act of insurrection. It's an act of hostility. And we must have accountability, because without it, it will happen again.
Mm. Yeah, it's a great point. And here's a dark line of thought. What do you think would have happened if that mob had gotten to Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? Mm-hmm. If they hadn't been led away, there's stories going around about this cop who led them away for a couple of minutes so they could be cleared, which is an awesome, that's amazing that that happened. Think about what they would have done. So she's taking it seriously. She's being mocked and attacked constantly. She always will be for a number of different reasons, some of which are fairly obvious. But yeah, she fears that she could have been attacked. She could have been killed, as well as her colleagues as well.
Yeah.
So really fast. So the argument about the unity, what do you think about that? That we need to, like, we got to turn down the temperature, because if we provide consequences to Trump, that will make his insane base angrier.
Too late for any of that. It is so too late. I mean, and I think even Democrats are realizing, but I think Republicans are realizing that the fash is out of the bag, y'all. The violence has come to your doorstep. It's been, you know, on the streets. It's been on the doorsteps of a lot of people all summer long. We've seen it before. We saw it at the Unite the Right rally. And I know this is a different amalgamation of nut jobs, but it's similar, and we should be drawing parallels. We saw it the minute that Trump announced his presidency. I'll never forget when I believe an immigrant, a Latino immigrant, was brutalized and by two Trump supporters who said, this is from our president, or this is from Donald Trump, right? So the through line is there. Stop being so naive about it. And absolutely, AOC is right. We gotta put a shock collar on these people. There have to be consequences. Get the spray bottle out. Everybody knows if you just let your dog go anywhere they want in the house without any consequences, they're just gonna keep doing it. So no.
Yeah.
We need to house train these Republicans, and the only way to do that is for there to be consequences for what they helped incite. Because remember, they were a-okay with a less violent version of essentially what this mob tried to do, which is just as anti-democratic, takes a different form, but is absolutely 100% anti-democratic. Now, the last point I want to make is this is the history of our country. The history of our country is, look at the Civil War. Breakaway racists trying to get away with their actions, denying the presidential election of Abraham Lincoln, which then led to them actually creating the Confederacy, right? Because they saw the writing on the wall. They thought that slavery was going to be over. And in fact, then there was a war to make sure that it was. This is the history of this country. If there are not consequences for white supremacists, for racists, if we do not defend specifically black and brown communities and lift up their voting rights and their civil rights, then we're gonna be facing this over and over and over again. So what does that accountability look like? And for my scared white people out there, it's just equality. Don't worry. No one's taking anything from you. It's just equality.
I agree. Okay, so we're gonna see what happens. Not too long after the Friday edition of the Damage Report, some pretty big social media news happened. Did you hear? Donald Trump got taken off of Twitter forever? Yes, forever. Always and forever. Like, for good. And he responded not well. He started wandering the halls of the White House, taking people's phones, trying to tweet from their accounts and causing them to be banned in what is basically a dominoes of banning of everyone who happened to be in his path. So we have some updated information, but we didn't get to talk about this on Friday. So I feel like we gotta mention it. Francesca, what do you think about this?
Brilliant, beautiful. End of story. It should have happened a long time ago. Stop trying to make this about anything else than the glory that is knowing This president can no longer spout lies and incite violence from 88 million, well, okay, without the Nazi bots, 65 million follower Twitter account. And I think it should be celebrated. It's good. I don't trust Twitter at all. I don't trust the tech companies for sure. But look, the ringing in our ears has quieted. Suddenly, there's just a little bit more space, a little bit more peace. And I think it's so funny that every time he probably just grabbed someone's phone and tried to tweet in all caps. Everyone, you know, like Twitter was like, oh, we got an all capser. I think this is the president. Shut it down. It's great.
Exactly. Yeah, and so they lost. He lost his campaign account. I think official POTUS. They stopped him from using it briefly because he immediately started using that. Anyway, after those initial techniques, he apparently calmed down a bit to a state that was described by a senior administration official as ballistic.
That was the calm
the official
state.
Said Trump. That's the calm state. That's orange. The official said Trump was scrambling to figure out what his options are. Through it all, he's been uncharacteristically quiet, banished temporarily at first from the main social media platforms, but also unwilling to go out and speak before the press. So really fast, because I know a lot of people's knee-jerk reaction was, oh my God, the president has been silenced. But bear in mind, he has an entire press team, can do live Q&As, live press conferences, live appearances, live speeches, can release press releases that will be picked up by literally every news outlet in the world. He wasn't doing that. So I think the rage was less about being silenced and more about Twitter specifically. I'm just gonna go out on a limb and say that. But apparently he's been thinking about doing a last farewell interview, but official, again, anonymous, says not sure if that's gonna come to fruition, especially if it involves questions, which he does not like. He's apparently negotiating with various other sites, saying they're looking at possibilities of building their own platform. God. So like Trump Twitter, I don't know what that would be.
Will they build it on WordPress, like Parler? Please, but WordPress is a very secure site. No, yes. Totally.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to be a Patriot platform available at geocities.com/patriot platform. That's what it's gonna be. Anyway, he did have a site temporarily that you could go to. His son Don Jr. offered up a URL for people to go. That was actually a site that was plugging his book, though. In case you were wondering how much of this is about grift and not about communication and First Amendment rights, they were just trying to sell his book. But anyway, that's it for now. I mean, that's really. I didn't expect it to happen. The social media platforms have been so deferential, not just to Trump, but to the right. And they have participated and been made the accomplice to so much misinformation. Incredibly damaging, life and death misinformation, election altering misinformation. That like, I will give them some credit, but only so much. Mark Zuckerberg like is like a week out from Joe Biden taking over. And so he's like, oh wait. I guess there's a new guy. Yeah, suddenly I don't care about Trump anymore. No, it's way too late for you getting any sort of all-encompassing credit off of that.
That's great, a great impression of Zuckerberg. It's very Muppet. Oh, hey, there's a little bit of like Mickey. I just wanted to rank girls. I wanna know which one is the hot girl and which one's the not hot girl. Oh no, I've set up a bunch of authoritarian governments all over the world, but I'm rich. Here's the thing.
I thought that was him. I thought that was literally him right there.
Do you like my bangs? Okay. Here's the thing. No credit to these companies. I mean, very little. The slowest clap for sure. I'm glad that that Trump is gone off the platforms. They've been raking in money, raking hand over fist money from misinformation, from far right extremism, as you just said. We need to nationalize them. Especially Facebook, my God, we need to break up big tech, absolutely. No, there shouldn't be, you know, these companies having that much power because they can turn it off and turn it on, right? They can decide who stays and who goes and when they get money and when they don't. And look, I'm just gonna put it out there that, you know, we know that the stats are like that fake news spreads like 6 times faster than actual news. We've all accidentally tweeted something or, you know, didn't read an article or it turned out to be not real. Like that stuff spreads like wildfire. And you know who's making money off of that? Facebook and Twitter and Google and all of these folks. And there's no incentive from legislators to rein that in, and there needs to be. So I am all in favor of regulating and breaking up big tech, and don't you dare tell me that that is censorship of freedom of speech, you know, against freedom of speech. The other thing I want to say is, I want to just do this cost benefit analysis for not having someone like Trump and other Nazis and white supremacists on something like Twitter. The cost benefit analysis is this: there have been many, many people who have been put in the crosshairs of Trump's tweets, from, you know, from black and brown immigrants, from Muslims, to Megyn Kelly, who somehow still hasn't learned her lesson. That, like, but she was attacked by Trump and all of his trolls. So that is absolutely a better world when we have someone like Trump, the biggest cyber bully out there, the bestest of the best. Gone. When we have him gone, that is a win. That is protecting people. That is already protecting people. Taking all of his tweets down is protecting people. It prevents these psychos from going in, from following his orders. We know that they make good on whatever threat, whatever whiff of a threat that he makes against anyone, they will follow through on. So don't come at me with free speech. This is absolutely a win when we want to stop this kind of violence. Yeah.
And by the way, the bannings of Trump, it's not limited to Twitter. And this, it's always interesting when, like, the dam breaks. And it's a question of, are the follow-on platforms doing it because now they feel allowed to, or because they're just scared of being the last one to do it? I don't know, but he's banned on Reddit, Twitch, Shopify, Twitter, Google, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, Apple, like the whole thing, Discord, Pinterest.
Oh yeah.
What, yeah. Was he posting pics of, like, beautiful, like, rustic bread on slabs of wood?
Yeah, it was a lot of, like, decorative pillows, you know, with, like, slogans that are like hashtag blessed, except it was like hashtag MAGA, you know, or hashtag.
Yeah, there was a period. He was doing a lot of, like, Moroccan tile.
Yeah.
He got really into that. Maybe he was doing home reno, I don't know.
And it was like one of those seeing eye, like a swastika would jump out, you know, of the tile. It was very
tasteless. When you blur your eyes. Yeah. It was very tasteless, that's true. But anyway, banned from all of that. So that's fun.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
So last week, all those people stormed the Capitol. They had multiple missions. It was an amalgam of all of the worst sorts of red hat wearers. But one that seems to jump out is that a number of them wanted to murder Mike Pence. They wanted to find and execute Mike Pence. They were chanting it. They're on video saying it. They apparently believed that Mike Pence had betrayed the president by not stopping the certification of the votes. And they believe that because everyone they trusted, including Donald Trump, told them that. Every one of them were told for weeks that Mike Pence could save them from this election being stolen, even though it wasn't true. Donald Trump told them and said, if he doesn't save us, I'll like him a lot less. And so they storm in and they try to get Mike Pence, a guy who I have no interest in defending, but I would like to point out had nothing but a ceremonial role in this whole thing and could not stop the election from being overturned, even though it wasn't stolen anyway. But while all of that was going on, while people who love Trump more than God himself were trying to murder Trump's vice president, according to sources familiar with the matter, while the vice president and his family were in a bunker in the Capitol, the president did not reach out to check on his safety, nor did he condemn those who said the VP should be executed. Pence and Trump have not spoken since the riots unfolded, according to a source familiar with the matter. It is possible that today they have, but considering that there's footage of them literally chanting, "Hang Mike Pence," one would think that Trump, a guy who has whipped them into a frenzy about this conspiracy theory and then pointed them towards Mike Pence and told them to march, that he might at least say something either publicly or privately, but evidently neither of those has happened.
No, hiding like a, you know, like a little bitch in his bunker. Sorry, I could say that. I mean, that's the other thing is like Trump was supposed to lead this. Trump was supposed to lead this. And I think he might have even wanted to lead the march until he was told he couldn't. So then he just.
It's a long way to walk. He can't do it.
Yeah. And then he just hid. And can I just say, I want to, you know, we spent a lot of time pointing out how painfully stupid the president is. And he is. He continues to be. But I've never believed in the 7D chess theory that he secretly had some grand plan until now. And I say that because watching crowds chant down Mike Pence, hang Mike Pence, watching them follow Lindsey Graham in an airport and chant like after him, these are two of Trump's most loyal lapdogs. Yep. Loyal, so loyal, have done everything for him, have bent over backwards, have shut up, have said contradictory things, have gone on record to lie for him. And now they're getting thrown under the bus because Trump, as he's completely been a cancer on the Republican Party, and they allowed him to be, they allowed him to take over their party. And then now when he wants to bring them to this realm of unreality, when he wants them all to be, you know, seditious anti-government tyrants, like then they're like, I think we need to draw a line. And it's like, oops, sorry, buddy, the gates have closed. Now you're on the other side. No. This is our party now. You're on the outside of this. And so I find that to be like so twisted and a perfect play. Like what a perfect punking of and just a perfect reversal on Lindsey Graham and on Mike Pence. And they absolutely deserve all of that that's coming at them, not obviously from the right, but they deserve to be pointed out the fact that they gave so much leeway to this president. And this is what's happened. And the last thing I just want to say is that it's important to drive these wedges in conservatives. I know we kind of see the Republican Party as a monolith that is essentially, again, allowed itself to be taken over by Trumpism, that has low key dog whistled all the same rhetoric that Trump is also openly saying now for decades, right? You know, since Reagan and beyond. Yeah. But there is a moment here. I don't want to miss this moment to say there can be a wedge driven in these Republicans, and we can actually potentially separate off the Ted Cruz's and the Josh Hawley's as a losing strategy and salvage the others. I don't have a lot of faith, but I do think it's worth trying, however we try.
Yeah. And I think it starts by letting people, letting those people not like whitewash their involvement in this.
Right.
Like Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley are trying to be like pretending that all they did was the vote, which by itself returning to the floor immediately after that attack to do the same thing as the attackers wanted them to do would be bad enough if it wasn't after 2 months of spreading information that they knew every step of the way was completely false and doing it purely for their own political aspirations going forward. We need people to know that. Like the idea that I never thought the idea that like Josh Hawley's a different sort of Republican. Progressives can work with him in good faith. I always thought that was BS. I think it's a little bit harder to make that case now than it was 6 months ago. And people need to know who these people are. These people are grifters in politics, effectively. It's a different flavor than in media, but it has the same outcome. It is the manipulation of the truth, the whipping up of emotion to benefit themselves. And I want to let you know about one bit of breaking news before we go on to other news. I am reading that Representative Bonnie Watson, a 75-year-old Democrat, has tested positive for COVID. She believes that she was exposed while hunkering down during the attack last Wednesday, when multiple Republican members of Congress refused to wear masks despite being ordered to. We don't know for sure. She is 75, which means that she is in a high-risk category for COVID. So let's see what happens from that. The building's being stormed by QAnon people and anti-maskers. They get brought out. People are like putting their lives on the line to save these Republicans, and they go in the room and say, "No, I'm not wearing a mask. I don't care. There's a terror attack going on right then. No, I'm not wearing a mask."
Honestly, though, John,
the worst people.
How high is this presidency's body count? How high is the Republican Party's body count after all of this? It's not just five. You know, it's not just the kids in cages and kids who've been, you know, killed, or people who've been killed at the border. It is so high after this pandemic that they have consistently downplayed, that they have not shown any kind of leadership on. And now here you go. Of course, it's going to be inside the Capitol building. And I can't believe that the anti-mask stuff is perpetuated by them. Like gone, bye, get out of here. You've got blood on your hands. We should be voting these people out.
God, it's just insane. She tweeted that she's home resting, she's experiencing mild cold-like symptoms, remain in good spirits, and will continue working on behalf of my constituents. Hopefully, apparently there's video of one of the representatives in that room during the attack handing out masks, and some of the Republicans were refusing it.
Yes, I saw that. Snickering at the person who was.
Yeah, they think it's funny.
Yeah.
It's a joke. Yeah, we've only lost more than, you know, a third of a million Americans to this, but it's still a joke. The same, like Matt Gaetz is at least consistent a little bit. At the beginning of the pandemic, he thought it was a joke. He wore a gas mask on the House floor. Now he still thinks it's a joke. Jesus. Anyway, hope that she makes it through this.
Yes.
As the attack last week was going on, many people, like myself, were just shocked that this was allowed to happen, that all the warnings hadn't been heeded, and that so much of this violence and destruction happened, you know, multiple people being killed. And at the time, one of the more shocking parts of it was that the people engaged in these crimes, in this attack, were so gleeful about the entire thing, and they wanted to make sure that everyone knew who they were. So they posed for photos, they live streamed it and all of that. Here is the issue, though. While the initial defense was seemingly purposefully haphazard, leaving the few cops in the area the impossible task of stopping hundreds of people from breaking in, the investigation afterward, a little bit more successful. So the template for what we're dealing with right here is step one, F around. Step two, they're finding out. So let's run through a few of these individuals. According to a tweet from Brad Heath, the shirtless man with furs and a horned hat photographed on the Senate dais during the Capitol siege, Jacob Chansley, has been charged with unlawful entry. He told the FBI he came to DC at the request of the president that all patriots come to DC. So horn man has been found. What about lectern man, the guy who had been walking around with the speaker's lectern? Yeah, he was caught. This is Adam Johnson. He was caught. He's being charged with, I think it was trespassing there and maybe some theft, obviously. Let's see. We've also got, this is just a fun one. Prosecutors have also filed charges of unlawfully entering the Capitol against West Virginia lawmaker Derek Evans, who posted a video on Facebook in which he shouts, "We're in, we're in. Derek Evans is in the Capitol." No word yet on how they tracked him down.
Social Security, 629, like. Come on.
I don't like, here's a map with directions to my house. You're gonna wanna hang a left at the rallies. Anyway, yeah, they found him. So one of the more haunting videos from the attack was a police officer being chased through the building. One of the men, you can see the screenshot, doing the chasing and like sparring with the cop. He was also tracked down. This is Doug Jensen. He posted on Twitter back on November 12th that he was ready for four more years and will do whatever it takes. So whatever it takes turned out to be chasing a cop through the Capitol building. That cop must have been terrified that, like other cops, he could have been beaten and possibly killed by that mob of insane. Oh, by the way, on his shirt, I'm fairly certain that's a Q. So to give you an idea of who this person is, he believes in the QAnon stuff. He has been found and he has been charged. We also have this individual. Why am I focusing on this one? Not just because that's hilarious. I know he thinks he looks tough, but
it's just so funny. It is so funny.
No. Anyway, that's a retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel. Larry Rendell Brock Jr. was charged with knowingly entering or remaining in any restricted building or grounds without lawful authority and violent entry and disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds. Now, a retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel taking part in this is madness. He apparently had some of those zip ties as well. So God only knows what he planned to do. He's been taken in. The only thing funnier than that is the photo. The only thing funnier than the photo is the fact that, you know how they found him, Francesca? His ex-wife was watching the video and ID'd him and turned him in. Good. Anyway, retired member of the military, an officer, took part in this attack. So we've gotten most, in addition to last week, the guy with the Molotov cocktails, he was tracked down. They haven't yet found the guy who planted the pipe bombs, but the guy who had his feet up on Speaker Pelosi's desk, who talked about going out of this world bathed in someone else's blood, he's been found. They've been tracking down, not obviously the vast majority, but the most notable people who promoted their involvement in this so much, they're now being systematically tracked down.
Yeah, again, a little late. It's crazy we've had to track them down rather than what would have happened in any other circumstance, which would have been a mass arrest of hundreds of people, you know, which has happened whenever anyone protests in DC. Even nonviolently, but of course they didn't have the blessing and the encouragement of the White House and potentially some people in the Capitol itself in terms of security. I read this morning that Capitol Police were not properly given backup by their superiors, and their superiors didn't, you know, rejected additional support and left a lot of them out there. And we've seen, I can't even actually watch some of the videos because it is so chilling and so upsetting to see these police officers being bludgeoned, just straight up bludgeoned, whether it's being smashed in a doorway or just being like, you know, hauled out and beaten by you know, with protesters with flags and whatever. Like, it is so disgusting. And the fact that there is former military or former police officers tells you a lot about our culture of militarism in this country. It tells you a lot about how and who we're screening when it comes to our armed forces. And it tells you a lot about the way that the armed forces can actually radicalize people into being, of course, even more violent and supporting and lifting up those the worst elements of us, right? And as someone who wants to see the US military presence or here in the US and around the world, you know, scale back significantly, I think it's something we have to look at going forward. And the last thing I'll say is there's been a lot of misrepresentation about who was in this crowd and how these are working class Americans. No, they weren't. No, they weren't. A lot of the people we're talking about, look, there's like an indie rocker from LA with like, you know, some notoriety. There's the son of a Brooklyn Supreme Court justice. There was a tech CEO. There were a couple other tech workers.
A couple other CEOs.
Look, I'm not saying there weren't people who lost their jobs. In fact, I read about one this morning that who lost their job as a laborer, like a manual laborer. Like, look, that's very real. But no, let's not try and herald these folks as working class heroes. We just gotta reach out to, just gotta like, you know, find in the middle, meet in the middle, and they're just economically anxious. No, they're delusional. They're delusional. Yeah. They've been sold a lie by the president and so many media outlets. And you know, one guy is in the Capitol building screaming at the camera saying, "You did this to us. You did this to us." Of course, what he means is the Democrats and the Republicans who didn't go along with trying to overturn the election. But truly, when he said that, I'm like, yeah, we did do this. The president, right-wing media, conspiracy theories that got then laundered up through from Reddit to Breitbart, from 4chan to Fox News, they did that to you. They've poisoned your brain. And yeah, you didn't have a big brain to begin with. You had a lot to work with when it comes to putting worms in it. You know, the smaller the container, the faster they fill up with worms. But like, again, this is, we have to neutralize this. There have to be consequences. Going back to the beginning of the show and AOC's remarks, people need to be held accountable. And man, I hope they get as much of the book thrown at them as a protester who's, you know, fighting against police brutality would get. But we shall see.
I agree. One thing I want to fight back against is what I see ongoing, especially from the right. It is a desperate attempt to rewrite what happened last week. Not just, you know, from people directly involved, but others affiliated with that movement wanting you to believe that what happened was a tragic thing got out of control. That's all. That's it. It's not like AOC talks about that the fact that the representatives might have been murdered. No, she's crazy. That's not at all what it was. It was just some good people and there was someone bad in there that did something bad. And maybe it was probably Antifa anyway. So you don't have to worry about this. This doesn't mean anything. This doesn't represent anything. It's not that bad. And if there's one thing I want to make sure we don't allow to come out of this, it is the rewriting of this as it was just a protest or whatever. And just a few people died. I can't see how that could happen. But just in case, I want to remind everyone what was really going on there. And a lot of this is going to involve the cops. I mean, we not only we mentioned Eugene Goodman is the name of the cop who is now being credited as potentially saving the lives of multiple lawmakers by the threat of his own death, leading protest the people who were invading away from the actual Senate chamber. So other cops were being treated like this. Take a look at this photo. This is very rough material. We're going to show you video in a few seconds as a warning to you. That is a crowd of Trump fans all over the place. People who consider themselves patriots. There's a cop on the ground that they are beating. I don't know for sure. I believe that that is the cop, Ryan Sicknick, who ended up dying as a result of this. I don't know for sure. A lot of cops were injured during this, literally dozens. Every one of those Trump fans believes that they respect and love cops as they are beating a cop, potentially to death. A second police officer, by the way, died by suicide on Saturday this week after responding to the attacks last week. I want you to take a look at this video. This is what the crowd was like. This was not, hey, there were some people. This is what it is. That is a crowd of Trump fans beating a cop with the pole that the American flag is hung on. If you want to understand the entire movement, I don't think there's any more perfect encapsulation of it than that. These people love cops and they're trying to kill one. They love the country. They're using its flag to murder someone attempting to defend that country's government. That's what it is. And those people racked up multiple deaths, killed multiple people, but it could have been much worse. And one aspect of this is the fact that there was a very hefty amount of QAnon adherents in there. I want to show you a bit from an appearance by Ben Collins, who does research on radical movements like QAnon, talking about what could have happened.
I think an important thing to understand here is that there were two different kinds of people at this rally. There were Proud Boys, militiamen, oath keepers who stormed to the front with the idea that they would, you know, wreak havoc, cause violence, maybe arrest, maybe kill some lawmakers. That was the point for those people. Other people, if you're in the QAnon world in that universe, you thought you were going into the Capitol and you were storming it for Donald Trump. You thought you were receiving orders from him once you got inside the Capitol. And that's what was happening with a lot of those QAnon people. They were in there waiting for more orders. The guy with the zip ties, there were posts for weeks beforehand in the QAnon world about arresting these lawmakers and then bringing to justice on behalf of Donald Trump. And they explicitly talked about zip ties. They were makeshift handcuffs for the lawmakers if they got to the right part of the Capitol. I don't think people understand how close we were here. This was close to a mass casualty event involving members of Congress, and it's incredibly dangerous. That's what people are talking about. In QAnon, there's this thing called the Great Awakening. And in the Great Awakening, all of the lawmakers are arrested, rounded up, and executed in a public forum. And that's what this was to a lot of these people. They thought that this was about to happen.
That's really disturbing to hear.
It is. And I know that there's probably a lot of people out there that still want to believe, even after what happened last week, even after the multiple deaths, the bombs, the Molotov cocktails, the rifles, the zip ties, all of that, they want to believe that all of these people who flooded in there who keep trying to get you to understand what they believe about the world and what needs to happen and how much they do believe in that storm, that it's gonna come and that everyone that they hate in politics and Hollywood is gonna be rounded up and killed. There are people who still don't wanna believe that they really believe it. But these people were chanting "Hang Mike Pence" as they came in. They beat a cop to death. They do believe these things. And so when AOC talks about how many people could have been killed, I believe we should take that 100% seriously.
I mean, I think about whether someone was killed, you know, and whether Ted Cruz, I bet you he would say the exact same thing. I bet you
a representative, you're saying?
If a representative was killed, if anyone, if a lawmaker was killed, I bet you the Republican Party and a lot of them would be saying the same thing. In fact, I'm not so sure they wouldn't be gleeful that maybe there were some open seats. We could, you know, retake the House. I'm serious. That, I mean, this is kind of the level of violence and relishing in violence that these lawmakers are dabbling in. And so I've always been someone who did not give a cookie to people like Mitt Romney, you know, for voting to impeach the president in the first round and, you know, or like, you know, like trying to maintain some sort of moral center. Jeff Flake, another one. But now I think even folks on the left, and I think we're all seeing the consequences of this delusional type of Trumpism, and that yes, the Republican Party is sick. But this is absolutely the sickest tumor of it all. Trumpism is the sickest tumor of this party. And it's either gonna take the whole party down, which hey, go ahead, and but it's on you to remake it. But they're not having their government. They're not gonna take over this country. So what's it gonna be? How are we gonna do this going forward? And I absolutely believe there needs to be that wedge driven to say, you gotta let these crazies go. Because again, like Trump, we can say goodbye to Trumpism with Trump, with him. Because I got a spoiler alert. There's no successor to Trump. There's no successor. You think this movement is about anything other than him? No, it's about him. Even Ivanka can't fill those shoes. Ivanka's like, she wants to be like, I don't know, Christine Lagarde and like, you know, go to international meetings. She wants to be like, she's a globalist is what I'm trying to say. No, I'm obviously ironic, but I'm being sarcastic, but like there is no other movement other than Trump. It's only about him. So hey, let's throw the bathwater out with the baby, so to speak.
Did you see, you know, speaking of the people trying to fill this, did you see the representative Lauren Boebert or however you pronounce it? Do you see what she, the thing about her? From Wednesday?
No.
So she's the another one of the QAnon supporting ones. She's the one that released the ad of her supposedly carrying a gun in DC, and then it turned out they were lying. She wasn't carrying a gun. She was just pretending to carry a gun to get gun lovers to give her money. Yeah, during the attack, she was tweeting what was happening. When they were taken to the secure location, she tweeted it. And then later she tweeted, Speaker Pelosi has been taken from the secure location. Why are you live tweeting where the speaker is? Why did you do that? Why are you telling them in real time where?
Out.
And there's a conversation. Is that treason? Why are you letting people know that she's no longer in the secure location? I don't even know how accurate it is, but the attack is still ongoing. They're still in the building. Like it used to be Alex Jones is a crazy person who has a radio show or whatever. Yeah. Yep. It's not even one. They have multiple elected representatives that are every bit as crazy as any one of those people who were attacking the Capitol last week. And they are gleefully trying to get those people to support them even more. And they know the sorts of things they need to say and do to get those people's loyalty. Her and Marjorie Taylor Greene and others too, you know, Madison Cawthorn and all of that, like they are going to be working to convince these crazies that they are their representative. Forget their local constituency. Their constituency is QAnon, and there are millions of adherents across the country. It's still on her Twitter account. Don Latino Heat points out. Yeah, yeah. And she tweeted at the like early in the day. This is 1776. I don't know what these people need to do to convince you what their goal is, what they're trying to accomplish.
John, was she also at the rally saying something like Hitler was right? I believe There was a lawmaker.
I think
it's
that
funny.
Was a different person.
Okay.
But yes, yes, someone did say something. It was like a specific thing about Hitler, but it started off with Hitler was right, which don't go in that direction. Except they know their crowd. You got to give them that. You're a person who does stage work. You got to know your crowd. Anyway,
I don't ever want to. I mean, look, go back to that. I just last thing is like, I never want to hear any Republican ever say Patriot, Blue Lives Matter, Law and Order.
Yeah.
None of it. Yeah, that is a flagpole with the American flag, like you said, that just was used to kill a police officer. So no, you don't ever get wipe your mouth like that's just eradicate that from your vocabulary. You no longer lay claim to that. And I always feel like, I mean, look, this is the thing. We always, I think extreme patriotism and jingoism always leads to violence. It really does. But I think it's our chance to reclaim some of this BS, like false patriotism from the right wing, just like it's been our chance since Trump got into office to reclaim some of the moral high ground that has been relinquished to the right for so long. We know that Christian conservative BS is now been put on blast. It's nothing but a facade, and it has only been a facade. You don't care about family values or Christian values, right? We know that. So again, it's the ball is in the Democrats' court. We can turn this around, and it does not start by unity, Mr. Joe Biden. It does not.
Yeah. BuzzFeed News released the results of some interviews with a few of the cops who were involved in the defense of the Capitol on Wednesday, and this is amazing stuff. One officer who's been with the department for more than a decade said, "That was a heavily trained group of militia terrorists that attacked us. They had radios, we found them. They had two-way communicators and earpieces. They had bear spray. They had flashbangs. They were prepared. They strategically put two IEDs, pipe bombs, in two different locations. These guys were military trained. A lot of them were former military." And so we talked a little bit about that, about some retired military. There's also investigations going on to people who are current military, current police, current state legislators. That officer described coming face to face with police officers from across the country in the mob. He said some of them flashed their badges, telling him to let them through and trying to explain that this is all part of a movement that was supposed to help. He said, "You have the nerve to be holding a Blue Lives Matter flag and here you are out there effing us up," he told one group of protesters. One guy pulled out his badge and said, "We're doing this for you." Another guy had his badge. So I was like, well, you gotta be kidding. And so this is a cop doing the defense saying, came up against cops. So there really are multiple things going on here. There is footage that we saw that is extremely concerning about some of the cops defending the building. We also know that some heroically defended it, including at risk of their life. And for two cops now, their actual lives as a result of it. So both of those things can be true at the same time. We have a little bit more, Francesca, but what do you think about this? This is a cop's account.
I mean, it's chilling. It's awful. And especially that I believe these happen to be African American cops left out to a primarily, I mean, 99% white violent crowd. That should not be lost on anyone. It's just awful that their superiors would leave them in the lurch like that. And it's not just awful, it's completely suspicious. And I believe there is an ongoing investigation. And I just wanna say, I mean, I think it was Representative Jamal Bowman. I mean, the squad's been like really crushing it in the last week, introduced a bill that would, you know, conduct a full investigation and specifically about the links between some of the Capitol Police. Clearly not these gentlemen who are going on record saying that they were like fearing for their lives and talking about all the ammunition, but who all the links between some of these far right groups and police departments, the Capitol Police specifically, and that needs to happen all across this country. Once again, this is not the first time that there have been links between police forces and far right militias. We need to understand that. The FBI needs to get serious about that. The way forward isn't to beef up security, which of course is only gonna come down on like peaceful protesters, you know, those who normally, like people who are protesting for healthcare, but we need to really direct the resources properly, the FBI properly.
Yeah. 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 And by the way, it's sort of related to this. We don't have time for a full discussion, but I know some leaders are like, we need to pass all these new terrorism statutes and laws and stuff that seems vaguely Patriot Act-y. I would like to reassure those legislators, if they don't know, everything that happened on Wednesday was already illegal. Already illegal. You can't do a terrorism. You're not allowed to. We don't need a new anti-terrorism law. It's already bad, really bad, and you're not allowed to do it. Anyway, let's give a little bit more from some of these cops. Another officer described extraordinary scenes in which protesters holding Blue Lives Matter flags launched themselves at police officers. Quote, we were telling them to back up and get away and stop, and they're telling us they're on our side, and they're doing this for us. And they're saying this as I'm getting punched in my face by one of them. That happened to a lot of us. We were getting pepper sprayed in the face by those protesters. I'm not even gonna call them protesters, by those domestic terrorists, said the officer. And one, this is a black cop, after seeing a white cop taking a selfie with the attacker, says that one hurt me the most because I was on the other side of the Capitol getting my ass kicked, he said. I got called the N-word 15 times today, one veteran officer said, shouting it in the rotunda. Trump did this and we got all these people in our department that voted for him. How could you support that? I cried for 15 minutes and just let it out. Yeah, there, because that cop is standing in the building feeling what we're all feeling. How is any of this possible? And the cops in these interviews, you go to the BuzzFeed article and read the entire thing, they express a lot of the suspicions that we were expressing on Thursday and Friday. What the hell was happening? They were calling their superiors during the attack and not getting through to people.
Yeah.
Wondering how, like, you didn't tell us to bring gas masks today. Like, no attack has been more announced earlier and organized openly on social media than this. And we're wondering why there was so little defense there. Some of the cops are wondering why there was so little defense there. Now, some people have already lost their jobs. The sergeant at arms has already resigned. But there also need to be investigations. If there's gonna be healing and unity, we need to know if anyone that was involved in this on whatever level helped to disarm the cops that were there to protect it. And it's certainly looking like that. We have no proof of that. We just have a lot of evidence that looks really bad.
Yeah, I mean, you have cops on the other side opening gates. We've seen videos. They exist opening gates for protesters, for the insurrectionists, for the thugs to get through. I just have two points, which is one, those police officers should be testifying in front of the Senate. There should be a hearing. They should be staring lawmakers who they were protecting in the face and tell them what they faced down. The violence, the racism. And I want Ted Cruz to stare and have to sit in that room to say, okay, is this what you're condoning? Is this your party? And the second thing is, if they get COVID, which police officers there might very well get COVID, I want them to get all the monkey meds, everything
100%.
Rudy Face Mal Giuliani got, I want that for these police officers who defended lawmakers. And also, have they been vaxxed? Let's make sure they got the vaccine. Do they have the vaccine? I'm actually very curious. I wonder if they have the vaccine. I sure as hell hope so.
They better. Yeah, no, you're 100% right. The testifying, I hadn't thought about that. But they, like, whatever, there has to be. Because, like, even the cops in the area, like the leadership, they aren't having a big press conference, really. Like, the Republicans want to immediately move on. No, there needs to be investigation, a fully fully televised thing, and get these people in there to talk about what they saw.
Yes.
Like, we cannot let the country just move on from this, because you know the attackers aren't just moving on from it. All the ones who evade justice for what happened, and all of those 10 times as many, 100 times as many, 1,000 times as many around the country, they are waiting for the next one. They're not gonna go away, and they haven't changed their mind. So we need to make sure that every reasonable person understands what exactly happened.
Absolutely.
Francesca, thank you as always.
Thank you. John.
I started Facebook. Oh, I stole the idea. Anyway, where can people watch your content?
Oh yeah, watch the Bituation Room podcast live every Sunday 6-9 Eastern on my YouTube channel /FrannyFio. And then also you can listen as a podcast. And yeah, thanks so much. We had a really good discussion yesterday with Bill Fletcher Jr. If you haven't heard of him or don't know him, he's excellent. So yeah, check it out.
Awesome. Thank you as always.
Thank you. Take care.
Very excited to welcome to the program, for the first time, the author of White Feminism, From the Suffragettes to Influencers and Who They Leave Behind, Coa Beck. Welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Everyone's seeing the book there. Very glad to have you on. One of my favorite things about doing interviews like this is not only to expose our viewers to new books, different perspectives and things like that, but I'm also looking to learn something. And so your book just came out last week. So tell us a little bit about it, about the response it's getting, but also, you know, the path to you to writing and releasing this.
Sure. So just to give your, you know, viewers an insight into my thesis, I basically chart and define the white feminist ideology. So the history of it, how it was created, the foundational elements that were very pertinent to the middle to white upper class suffragettes in this country, and the ways in which their approaches to achieving gender equality play out, you know, now when we talk about like the wage gap or economic security or, you know, even a lot of dynamics that happened in Women's March, for example. In terms of how I came to the book, I've worked in mainstream women's media for about 10 years. So I've been covering gender and identity politics for my entire career. And I guess you could say like effectively retired from leadership positions in media in 2018 to write this book. I was awarded a fellowship at the Harvard Kennedy School to do the foundational research for the book. So I went from running, you know, Jezebel, along with I worked at Vogue before then and Marie Claire, these like super busy newsrooms, to literally turning off my phone and going into a library and pulling like archival magazines.
Look, there's a lot that I want to talk to you about the book, but let's talk about something that you allude to in the you know, sort of the subtitle to the book, about being left behind. So what are fundamentally some of the issues with the history that you trace and its current incarnation? Who is being left behind by some of the ways that this white feminism engages with politics today?
Basically everyone. I chart through the book Black women, queer women, Chicanas, Native women, non-binary people, working class people, immigrant people, and obviously a lot of those identities are hybrid and overlap as well. A big premise of white feminism and the way that it operates both structurally, but also just like on a one-to-one level, is that you have to aspire to a certain lifestyle or class, or partnership or job to really be seen by this movement and to really be able to engage with it at all. I think it's really pertinent to consider that, you know, for the past, I would say like post Lean In, like a lot of the mainstream feminist rhetoric around like achieving equal rights or, you know, getting around gender bias in the workplace has often been anchored very firmly in working all the time and working specifically at like a white collar job, you know, where you have a prominent leadership position and you ascend in this really corporate way. Yet, you know, if you actually look at like the data of a lot of women and non-binary people in this country, they work all the time. And in fact, they work all the time and barely achieve a living wage. They don't have affordable healthcare. Many of them are food insecure. They don't have access to affordable housing. And so this mantra of like working all the time and companies ultimately being benevolent is deeply exploitative of a lot of women and marginalized genders in this country.
Interesting. You know, so I know that in the book you talk about how it's sort of developed into a brand, that it's been commodified. Is that basically what you mean, or are there other elements to that of it having sort of its own brand identity that's developed over time?
I would say kind of both. I mean, even one thing that was really important in my research that I found actually when I was doing my fellowship is that branding in white feminism has always been a strategy. Even the middle to upper class white suffragettes partnered with consumerism and brands to basically relay the message and importance of women having the right to vote. And this often manifested in things you could buy. Literally one suffrage group named Macy's the headquarters for suffrage. And there were window displays on Fifth Avenue with like votes for women flags. And there was an official like suffrage outfit that, you know, supporters were encouraged to buy. And there is a through line, I think, that I trace in the book between that and a lot of the, you know, smash the patriarchy dust mugs and like feminist AF t-shirts, you know, this idea that you're supposed to buy your politics, and particularly as a feminist.
Interesting. I thought that we might get into Goop territory or something like that, but you're right. Like everything has been commodified, including slogans and things like that. So yeah, so what's so funny is that you're analyzing this at this level that takes into account so many intersecting demographic variables. And I think about like on the opposite side, there's like, well, I was gonna say right-wing males, but not just right-wing males, males who are like, feminism's dumb. It's one thing. It's a specific thing. It's always been the same thing. It always wants the same thing. And obviously that's such an oversimplification. But even like the next step of there's been these different waves of feminism is obviously a simplification of its own. Mm-hmm. It's like it's a linear process developing over time. Where is it going? Like you're identifying this, and I think that I think even people who aren't, you know, researchers in this area, you know, whether specifically about feminism or about gender issues like you, understand that these concerns about intersectionality and that sort of thing. Where is it going in the future? Do you have a path forward? Is there something you'd like to see happen?
I do spend the last third of the book laying out what I think would be a course correction for white feminism. But I do think it's important to remember when you're approaching a question like that, that many other feminisms and movements for gender rights in this country have achieved a lot and have existed well outside of a white feminist ideology. And these are groups that have fought more collectively, you know, rather than the individual woman's succeeding in this very specific framework. There have been all kinds of amazing consumer activism that's been led by women of color, all kinds of initiatives that have been led by queer women and immigrant women in this country. The history of labor rights in this country is really, really rich with women's history specifically. And so I think if you're concerned with the way forward, I think a good place to start is to look at those movements, which I think, again, the way that a lot of mainstream white feminist rhetoric and dialogue exists in this country is that white feminism, unfortunately, is given the default as, you know, the capital F feminism in this country. And I don't think that's true. I think that's a deeply flawed narrative and indicative of white supremacy.
Well, fascinating material. Anyone watching this, if you're interested in learning more, the book is White Feminism, From the Suffragettes to Influencers and Who They Leave Behind. Bobek, we really appreciate you joining us on the show today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.